Great to have you with us on the Ideas Network. Larry Mueller here. You know, beavers are pretty amazing creatures. And on Wednesdays, we always talk about natural resources and wildlife kinds of issues. And happy to talk to start the show about beavers with our guest, Bob Boucher. Tell you what, he knows a lot about how beavers help the environment. He's the founder and president of the Superior Bioconservancy. It's an organization that looks to protect Lake Superior and the Laurentian Forest Province in northern Wisconsin, Michigan, and Minnesota. And he's also the founder of Milwaukee Riverkeeper. It's an environmental advocacy organization for rivers in the Milwaukee area. It's great to have him with us today to talk about some of the research that he's done, but just talk about beavers in general, and hopefully he'll be able to answer your questions, and maybe you've got a comment or an experience to share. Hope you'll join in. Number to call is 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Or you could email us the email address ideas@wpr.org. ideas@wpr.org. Bob Boucher, welcome. Thanks for joining us today.
Well, thank you, Larry.
You spent some time last week in Alaska, I understand, researching beavers up there. Tell us about that trip.
Well, we went up to Shiak Island, which is an island. It's a state park in the north part of the Kodiak Archipelago. There's the beavers that live there were interesting because it's a monoculture of Sitka spruce. It's a 47,000-acre island that's never been cut, but it's never had any other tree species than Sitka spruce on it. So the beavers basically build earthen dams there. And they tag a series of ponds together, and that's their territory. They do some gnawing on these trees, but if you go into the interior of Alaska, you'll see the traditional idea of a beaver dam plus a lodge in the center of the pond. And in Wisconsin, they're unique in that they're probably the most important keystone species we have because they're a combination of an ecosystem engineer as well as this keystone. So how they affect rivers is they change the hydrology significantly when they're not extracted from it. So when we had the fur trade in Wisconsin...
Yeah. I mean, they were almost extinct, weren't they, at one point?
By around 1900, they were almost extinct. And what people don't realize is that the hydrology was so different. So you think of a stream as sort of a sinuous line going downhill. But the difference with beavers in it, it's a series of ponds, especially in the upper areas, upper reaches, what they call first order and second order streams. And so each of these ponds is a wetlands, and those wetlands stabilize the system. So you have up to eight times as much water. And a way to sort of think of it is if you think of a tree in winter and you look at it, watersheds are shaped like that. You have the small branches going up and then you have the main stems. With beavers on it, it's almost like think of an apple tree with all those apples. So each one of those apples is a small pond. So you could have a watershed of, say, 1,000 square miles. You might have 500 or 600 more ponds in it. That adds a lot more water, but it stabilizes the whole hydrology. So your base flows, your dry periods, you have more stable flow, and during a peak flow or a rain. And they're very important for climate change coming up because we're seeing some of these what they call a cell storm where you get maybe 8-10 inches of rain in a short period of time like they had in North Wisconsin in 2016 where it just ripped bridges out and Highway 2. And so what we're advocating is re-beavering, if you will, these watersheds because we will have more biodiversity, better water quality. And the system itself, the geomorphology, the shape of the stream is more stable. So you get less erosion, less phosphorus loading. And there's so many benefits, but you have to have the beavers on the landscape, of course, to achieve those goals.
Yeah. You know, let's talk a bit about how beavers live and their family life and that sort of thing. I found that really interesting. I can remember back in grade school, we had a beaver skull. And the teacher was, Mrs. Dahl, was showing me the teeth and how long those teeth can get, and one of the reasons why a beaver has to chew a lot is because they have to keep the teeth down.
That's correct. If you look at a beaver teeth, they have a reddish pigment on the outside of them, and that's because it's an iron oxide that they're able to metabolize, and that's in the outside of it. And then the dentine's on the inside. So as the beavers gnaw on things, that continues to wear down, and it basically forms a chisel. And they do need to gnaw on wood to keep those from getting, basically wear them down a bit. They're also, where they use that is on trees like aspen and willow. They can extract the sugars and carbohydrates from that, from the Cambrian, and that's one of the nutritional things. But then they use those materials for building materials, and so their life cycle is, if they, let's say, colonate an area, they'll build a dam across a small stream, and this might be only 1 or 2 feet across, and then it creates a pond, and then they build a lodge out in the center of that as a type of protection from predators like bears or wolves. And that structure, in essence, as it fills in essence, changes over time to form a garden, if you will. So they eat primarily, 90% of what they eat is aquatic plants in the summer. So the tubers, example, from water lilies and rhizomes, those aquatic plants. So they basically want to have, they develop this garden, which creates forage, but it also creates, as a habitat builder, ducks and birds, and amphibians, reptiles, all those have a great benefit. In our Wisconsin climate and in this region, the wetlands we have are the richest form of biodiversity we have. They're akin to a rainforest or a coral reef, for example. So every square meter, we're getting more. And these are absolute engines of productivity in terms of food base for everything. So you start out with phytoplankton, zooplankton, and then goes on the way up. So crayfish, fish, all species benefit from that. And in the life cycle, they have a family group, and then they'll have kits, which is what they call their babies. But normally they will stay with the family 2 years before they disperse. So the young stay with it and learn, and they appear to learn on the building of these dams is also that. How they figure out where to build the dams, we haven't figured out, because they seem to be absolute geniuses at site selection. They can also cause some problems and sometimes with nuisance flooding, but there's a lot of management techniques for using flow devices and systems to avoid nuisance flooding around culverts or roads. They also they dig canals off into different areas. And they do this for two reasons. One, why swimming, they're safer in the water. But then let's say they go up and they cut a canal, and I've seen these a couple hundred yards in. So these are maybe a little ditch that they're building or they're excavating. They'll take the mud out. It might be about a meter wide and maybe a couple feet deep. And they'll punch it into an area where there's, let's say, an aspen grove. They cut down the aspen, and then they bring it back via the water. They don't have to tow it across the land. It's safer for them as in terms of escaping a predator, but they'll also, these arms or fingers that go off create a lot of good environment for amphibians, and they can disperse better that way.
It's an amazing family structure that they've got. There's no doubt about it. Michael in Wauwatosa has a comment. Let's go there. Michael, hi.
Hello. First of all, I want to say I'm so glad to hear that there's someone or an organization out there advocating for beavers and protecting them. I just got back from a week's worth of hiking around Isle Royale in Lake Superior, and that is everywhere there's water, there's signs of beavers, and I did see one, but it's like a beaver reserve, and I'm so glad to see that they're protected there. I've also hiked around the Ice Age Trail and Shawamigan Nicolet, and there's just, you can see beaver, the dams that must be thousands of years old that are now earthen walkways, or it's just amazing, and the habitat that they created. And one thing I wanted to say is I wish that, like, the DNR would set aside areas to protect beavers, because I think, you know, whenever they dam up a trout stream or something, the trout fishery takes precedent over the beavers. And they're so essential to waterfowl habitat and amphibian habitat and you know, creating such great habitat. And I think they've been so over-persecuted. I'd like you to maybe comment on the trapping regulations on them, and if there's such a thing as a beaver reserves or preserves in the state or something like that, please.
Mm-hmm. Thanks for your call. Yes, unfortunately, the Wisconsin Department of Natural Resources probably has the worst beaver policy in North America. We have a five-month season with an unlimited take, and there's no record keeping. The normal theory with wildlife management is that you have to know what your resources is, and then you have a tag for it, and then you count, let's say, how many are harvested to manage that. Wisconsin in the fisheries department believes that, and it's not true, but it's a dogma that they have, is that they're improving trout streams by removing beaver. There was a recent study done in 2018 looking at 44 different studies that were done in the Midwest, in Minnesota, Wisconsin, and Michigan, and it showed very clearly that if you have beaver on a stream, and this is with brook trout habitat, you're going to catch more trout, and they're going to be bigger. The reason is the forage base that these, by putting the wood into the stream as well as the forage base. So to answer your question, there's really no area other than a national park in Wisconsin that is off limits for trapping. There is a citizen resolution that's being pushed forward by the Wisconsin Conservation Congress, by a citizen here in Madison, to banning trapping on public land. So the Chequamegon, so just for reference, trapping, Wisconsin has about 5.9 million people, and there's about 7,000 trappers. So there's one trapper for every 1,000 citizens. But 7,000 trappers can clean off, basically eliminate wildlife in the landscape. So whether it's otters, muskrats, fox, beavers, all those can be – trapping is not really difficult to do. It's work because you do it in the winter. But with wildlife, in 1918, we implemented a law, a federal law, that stopped market hunting in 1918. So that was to stop the slaughter of waterfowl and deer. At that time, you could go and just shoot a deer, take it to a restaurant, and sell it. But we need to have something like that for fur. Fur was never part of that. So if you want to see a bobcat or an otter in northern Wisconsin, it's going to be very difficult for you because most of the animals have been trapped out. So if this resolution was passed, so if you can get 10 people out of 1,000 residents to support it, you'd be basically outnumbering the trapping community. Trapping is something that has a useful role, but for the most part, it's not necessary anymore. We need the wildlife, and the function that beavers provide to hydrology, for water quality, for quality of life, and also all of the other habitat. For example, in Voisey's National Park, which is about 500 square miles, there was a newer national park that was started in 1976. Within it, there's 31 great blue heron rookeries in that 500 square miles. 100% of them are in a beaver pond. 82% of the osprey nests are in a beaver pond. So these are not only beneficial for our water quality, for biodiversity, and we're in a global tragedy around biodiversity, which basically everything functions. This is an organism, you're an organism, and by letting nature regreen and stabilize the hydrology, we'll have a way to manage some of the flooding. But thanks for your call.
Thanks, Michael. Appreciate your call. You can join in, too, by the way. The number to call, 1-800-642-1234, 800-642-1234, or email to ideas@wpr.org. Clara Neipert, our producer today, Tyler Ditters, our engineer. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. A little bit later on, along about 11:45, we will be talking about invasive plants on the program. Right now, though, we're dealing or discussing beavers and the beaver population in our state, talking a little bit about beavers' impact in terms of helping our wetlands and other animals, insects survive. And also taking a look at some research, haven't gotten into that yet, with Bob Boucher, our guest. Bob's the founder and president of the Superior Bioconservancy, but some really interesting research that he and others put together on how beavers could reduce flood damage in Milwaukee, the city of Milwaukee. And I found it kind of fascinating, and I bet you will as well as we talk with him. Hope you'll join in. Again, the number's 800-642-1234. And let's take a call. Ray in Iowa, we'll give you a chance. Our lines are filling up here.
Hello.
Hi, thanks for calling. What's on your mind?
Well, I have a beaver problem on some property that I have. They were flooding some farmland, and I ran across a device called the Beaver Deceiver.
Uh-huh.
Yes.
Have you heard of that?
Yes.
Okay. Just wondering if you had.
Yeah. Can you explain that, Bob?
Yeah. There's a couple different things. It basically uses a stack pipe and a pond. So let's say if a beaver has a dam across a certain spot, and you want to lower the level of that, the effect of the dam to avoid any nuisance flooding. You put a stack pipe at one end, and you run this. It's a large, it's like a black corrugated thing that you'd use for a culvert, about a 12-inch wide, and then you run it right through the beaver. You notch the beaver dam, and you notch it through, and then you have an outflow, let's say 25 feet away, and you put a cage around both ends of that. It works the same way a storm detention pond is, in that once the water gets to a certain level, it automatically drains into the pipe, and so you can control the level of the dam. The reason they work good is the beavers can't figure them out. You can also have another type of device, and we're going to, after the show, I'll put a link in the NPR site for best management practices, which has some drawings and some diagrams as to how to build these. But there's also individuals, for example, Clay Fraser, who's at 608-416-3400. He is starting a business to install these or help people who have beaver problems. Also, if you have trees that are you don't want cut down, you can put fencing around it, similar like you might protect for a deer. But the beaver deceivers are about 85% protective. If you have a culvert where they're blocking it, you can build basically a trapezoid fence that extends out away from the culvert, and that will also discourage them from blocking that culvert, and that allows you to – and the beavers will then put the dam usually elsewhere. So there's a lot of devices. There's a whole science, what I call landscape ecology or landscape plumbing, to manage beavers in a successful way so you can keep them.
And what we'll put that up on our page today. So ideas at WPR.org/Larry. Bob will provide us with that. Give that to Clara Neipert, Bob, and we'll put that up for us for you today on the show. Thanks for calling. Chris and Marinette, your turn. Hi, Chris.
Hi, how are you?
Good. Appreciate the call.
I just have a comment. I live up in the Marinette area now, but I moved up here a couple of years ago from the Milwaukee area. And I did a lot of duck hunting down in the Milwaukee area. And from the sounds of your guests, there must not be any beaver or otter or anything left because they've all been trapped out. Now, I'm not a beaver, but I'm a duck hunter, and I see tons and tons of beaver and otter on the streams and small rivers that I hunt down in that area.
Yeah, and I, Bob, I don't think you were indicating that the beavers were nearing extinction.
No. And in northern Wisconsin, is that you're hunting up around Marinette County? Mm-hmm. That's where you're duck hunting?
No, I'm talking about hunting around the Waukesha area.
Okay. Well, what I'm saying is that if you had more beavers in the landscape, you'd have really thousands more ponds, which would be each producing a brood of ducks and all the other waterfowl species that, you know, birds and herons and things like that. And so, for example, if you looked at the Milwaukee River system, which in the northern part, there's a few, maybe 40 individuals in Milwaukee County where they're protected from trapping. In the northern area, we calculated that you could have about 4,000 beaver up there. From a habitat standpoint, because there's 89,000 acres of wetlands that are not under farming. And so you could have, there could be another 200 ponds up there. Each one of those would be reducing also wildlife. And so what people forget or don't realize is that when the Stone Age met the Iron Age or the Industrial Age, the natives, the Potawatomi that lived in the Milwaukee area and the Menominee and the Ojibwe, the only real currency was beaver pelts. And so beavers were extirpated in the Milwaukee area by that river system by 1730, 100 years before settlement, which started in the late 1830s, 1840s. The old accounts of trapping say that you had to go west and north of the Wisconsin River in 1730. So there's a type of what I just referred to as ecological amnesia of the how different the landscape was in pre-settlement, including huge abundant numbers of waterfowl that were so common.
Chris, I thank you very much for calling. And maybe this is a time before we go back to the phones for you to talk about that research that you were involved with on how beavers could help reduce flood damage in Milwaukee.
Yeah, thank you. So we did a project where we wanted to measure the hydrological impact of beaver restoration in the Milwaukee River watershed, which is about a 900 square mile watershed. It drains into downtown Milwaukee, and it has three sub-basins, the Kinnickinnick and the Menominee River. But the total area is about 900 square miles, and we had a team of eight people. I worked with Dr. Chen Lau and Dr. Shenzhu Wu, who are professors at the University of Wisconsin in Milwaukee. Dr. Lau is involved with the School of Freshwater Sciences, and he is an engineer as well as a hydrologist. And Dr. Wu is a geographer. And then they had two graduate students plus four of us doing field work, which I oversaw with Milwaukee Riverkeeper. So it was a partnership between the Milwaukee Metropolitan Sewage District, the University of Wisconsin, and Milwaukee Riverkeeper. The net results were that we found that there was excellent habitat upstream. We had tried to get the Department of Natural Resources involved in the initial part of it because even though there's a five-month season there, there's really nothing there. So they might as well be having seasons for buffalo or passenger pigeons because they're extinct. But we would like to restore that because the flood mitigation value would be in really millions and millions of gallons. So in the modeling, what it did was we would take a particular reach and we'd hypothetically put in what the hydrological effect would be if there's a 1 meter high beaver dam and the ponds that were created. And then there's storms, real storms that we have from hydrographs and from river base flows. And what you have is there's some simulated models where you have what's called a synthetic storm. And that's where say you'd have 10 inches of rain in 10 hours and what would be the effect? Well, if you have an effect like that, if you get a big storm, 15 inches of rain, 10 inches of rain, you could potentially flood downtown Milwaukee, and that would be an economic disaster because it's somewhat the economic engine of the state. So protecting it from flood and also just homes from private property from damage from flooding. With climate change, we're seeing this type of increase of that. So we, in essence, what it was showed is that we would be averaging, even though some of these, so we modeled in about 52 different sites where these ponds would be, and then measured what the effect is. And it would lower the peak flood levels 30-40% in downtown Milwaukee. So if you have a flood, you have the pulse where the water gets high, and as long as it's going through, staying in the channel, it's not damaging. Then it spreads out to the floodplain. But once it starts to inundate systems, backwater, the sewage system, enter homes, the damage and the effect is can be catastrophic, as it has been, let's say, Katrina. So this is the most cost-effective. So MMSD has a valuing of what's this worth. So they have a stormwater management program where they're paying developers $1.95 for stormwater storage. Well, we ended up with 1.7 billion gallons of water these 52 dams would store. And using their metric, that's worth $3.3 billion, where the beavers are working for free 24 hours a day and don't have any health insurance, and they're good. So there's a huge economic as well as ecological benefit. It also stabilizes the system. So within that, if you look at infrastructure, there's 1,000 bridges and about 1,000 culverts, larger culverts, the type you could walk through this, all the bridge system. Well, if you cut back the wear and tear on those, to rebuild a bridge, for example, is very expensive for municipalities or state or whoever is paying for it. But you and I are paying for it. So if you can, in essence, stabilize the system to avoid these peak flows, everyone benefits. Society benefits, and the ecology and the water benefits. So there's a social cost to this that there's, and we would like to see if we could get the Department of Natural Resources to declare a no trapping zone for aquatic mammals. This would be mink, muskrat, beaver in this region to allow reestablishment of this. And we've had resistance from them to help with that.
There you go. Thank you so much for that call. Kyle in Prairie du Chien will give you a chance to join in. Kyle, hello.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for taking my call. I just had a question about a tree that some beavers are working on. It's probably 2 feet in diameter, huge. And so my one question is, what are they going to do with that tree, and how do they know when it's going to actually fall? It looks like it's going to fall right across the little creek, so maybe that's why they're choosing to fall it right at that point. But I just kind of wondered, why would they tackle such a big tree, and then how do they know when it's going to fall?
I don't think anybody really knows when it's going to fall. Neither does the beaver. Do you know what species the tree is?
It looks like a cottonwood.
Okay, yeah.
I think.
Yeah, so sometimes they will go after a tree which seems, you know, a big lift like that. But what can happen and sometimes does happen is the wind knocks it over. So they notch it to a certain point. And they seem to have an ability to drop the trees generally in the river. Not always. But cottonwoods, aspens, willows, alders, things like that family, they'll feed on. So why are they dropping that big one? I don't know. If it has a lot of branches, if it drops in, then all that biomass of those upper branches, in theory, could potentially be food for them.
Yeah, so it's not the big log part that they're after. It's all the branches
coming
off.
Right, it's the all the small branches. And then if it does fall over, if you see it, they'll cut it up, and they'll remove all the small material, and that big log will just stay there.
Kyle, thanks. Appreciate the call. Barbara in Grand Marsh, we'll go to you. Hi, Barbara.
Hello. This is about trapping. I live on a small lake near Grand Marsh, Wisconsin. We have a wonderful beach. About 2 years ago, my dog, who liked to go into the water and pull the rocks up towards the shore, started screaming. I looked over. There was a trap on his foot. I had to carry him up 52 steps up to the house, get him in the car to go to the vet. I had the trap. I called the police. I said, there's a name on it. They said, oh, there's nothing that you can do. Sometimes people steal traps even though they're not theirs.
So it's, I guess she's wondering, you know, this particular lake may or may not, can anybody trap on any lake?
Generally, on any of the waterways of Wisconsin, that's a public right away, and they can trap on it. And there's supposed to be a name on the trap of who trappers are required to identify the traps, but they're not always. I've found traps, and they're not identified. There's also a lot of bycatch, accidental killing of otters, especially. The trapping is you know, if it gets your dog, it can kill your dog too. Especially the conibear traps, which is a body gripping trap. If a dog puts its head in there, it'll snap on its head, and you know, they can suffocate. So the type of trapping that they do with beaver and as well as otters, primarily a conibear trap that's under the water, the animal swims through it, and they get caught. I'm sorry to hear about your dog, but the DNR should follow up with that.
Yeah. Barbara, thank you for calling. Matt in Chippewa County, we'll go to you now. Hi, Matt.
Hi, Larry. I just have a question for you guest about his study design, because most beaver ponds are at capacity most of the time. So if you had a 10-inch rain event in 10 hours, it's more likely to flush out a dam than to hold back water. The other comment I would make is that I am a public land manager, and if we were unable to trap in our problem areas, I would be spending 4 to 5 times as much staff time trying to protect our infrastructure.
Well, one of the, if you use some of the devices, the beaver deceivers and things like that, Wisconsin, for the most part, is not using, even though Wildlife Services is one of the agencies that removes beaver, just not using non-lethal management. And the non-lethal management has proven to be more cost-effective in land management than lethal trapping. There's a number of studies that have proven it out. And the net result, the hydrology is that these ponds, what they do if they're established, and they're also there's more beaver up in the upper reaches of it, the net effect is that the base flow is stabilized. The peak flow is reduced, and even though it may appear that they're just, you know, getting blown out, the net effect is it buffers the whole system. So it's like taking a whole bunch of sponges and put it in a gutter. It's going to catch water, hold water. And it also puts a lot of water down into the water table. So the water's going down, and then it's percolating back through the groundwater. So when the water comes up, groundwater is about 11 degrees Celsius or 55 degrees. And when that goes back up, it's cooling down. So what a healthy stream is one that the thermal climb of the stream is more stable. So with beavers, you get warmer water in winter, and you get cooler water in summer, because there's a certain amount. So if you've waded in streams, if it's land manager, you probably have, you'll find cool spots and also warmer spots. And that structure, so fish, for example, will go and hang out in the warmer spots, but there's certain productivity, like a hexagenia fly for trout fishermen, will be over in muck, and the fish will move to that area to get the prey, which will only happen because the water's warmer there and the muck is there. But it's the analogy I use is it's like a refrigerator. I don't live in my refrigerator, but I keep my food there. And so the fish will move around, and they can also go through the dams. There's two studies that the DNR has done where they fin clip the fish and they move through it. So for trout fishermen, it's actually beneficial to have more beaver on the rivers.
Yeah. Thanks very much for calling. Appreciate your call. Well, someone else wondered about their tails. It's probably the most recognizable thing about a beaver. What does it do for a beaver?
The tail works like a rudder when it's swimming, but they also work like a vise. So if a beaver is going to be cutting into a tree or cooing, they'll take that tail and they brace against the ground, and it helps hold their position while they cut. So if you ever try to cut a board like freehand, and you can't do it, but if you stabilize it and you can cut on it. So it's a way of stabilizing while they're cutting. It also has a secondary function in that stores fat. So as beavers approach the fall, they'll feed heavily, and that tail will get twice as thick. It's got a type of brown fat in it. So a beaver tail in the fall will be twice as thick as it is in the spring. And they draw off on that fat over winter as a type of reserve for nutrition, in essence. It's a long, hard winter in Wisconsin if you're sitting inside a beaver lodge.
Yeah. And speaking of the lodges, somebody else wondered how they're built. I've stood on a very large beaver dam in Shawamigan National Forest that I think you could have driven a truck across. It was so solid.
Right. They start with putting sticks down the bottom, and then they'll use a lot of mud, and they basically build a pile, and then they actually excavate it from a tunnel going in, and they sort of build the pile, and then they dig it out. And there's two platforms inside. There's sort of a drying platform and an upper platform, and they'll bring in fresh bedding in it. And you can tell if a beaver pond or beaver lodge is being used, because it's going to generally, especially in the fall, you see fresh sticks on it. So that white stick that's just come off, it hasn't turned gray yet. And then they plaster that. And that plaster hardens up, and they're in essence making themselves like an earth lodge. And they will. There is a small vent in it, and you can also tell if a beaver lodge is occupied if you go by it and you see in the snow in the winter, there's a little air vent. So you get this little frosty cone that will happen up like a little chimney. But do not go right next to the beaver lodge because the water is warmer there, and there's a good chance you might go through. So there's times if it's really hard and frozen, yes, you can get up on top of them, and they can be impressive in terms. And they will also last a long time. The beavers may use it for a few years, and they may have another one. So sometimes they migrate around a little bit to go to different areas and forage.
So what's next for you? You've got this this study, which, I mean, what are your goals down the road here?
Our goals are to actually implement having beaver reestablished on the Milwaukee River watershed and change beaver policy in Wisconsin to recognize the hydrology benefits, the flood mitigation, the climate resilience, the biodiversity, and also to improve the quality of life of Wisconsin. When people want to go out, if you're going to take a walk in Shawangunk or any public land, most of the people are going out there, they would like to see some wildlife. So if you're walking and you see a bald eagle or you see a fox or you see an otter, or are you able to watch a beaver in the evening? Because it's the best time to watch them, by the way, is towards evening or early in the morning, because that's when they're active. They're active more nocturnal. But seeing wildlife as part of your experience in nature enhances it. That's why people go to Yellowstone Park. We don't have really a major national park in Wisconsin, and it would be good to take some of our private lands and convert those into having more sanctuary. So you still could have deer hunting, and you could have grouse hunting and turkey hunting, duck hunting, but we need to really change our trapping policies so we have wildlife, because they're 1 or 2% of what they could be. There's a base there, and people really are more interested in seeing wildlife than wearing a pair of wool or, you know, fur hat.
Bob Boucher, thank you so much for taking time to be with us. They appreciate it very much. Maybe we can do this again down the road. Thank you, Bob.
Thank you, Larry.
Bob Boucher, founder and president of Superior Bioconservancy. Interesting and fun to talk with him today about beavers. We're going to switch topics a bit and talk about invasive plants. And there are plenty of them that kind of show up at this time of the year. Mark Renz will be with us next to talk about those invasives. I'm Larry Mueller. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.